Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor, Sanjay Torre, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. It's going to be a fun one.
Exactly.
So what'd you do this weekend?
Actually, I'm just living vicariously through you because you went to that Ethiopian restaurant.
That's right. I went to an Ethiopian, Desta. Shout out to Desta.
Shout out to Desta.
And you're going to go there, right?
Yes, I am.
And then how was LeaderCast? Did you go to LeaderCast on Friday?
It was amazing. It was so amazing. So many great guests, so many things to take in. It was amazing. That's all I can say.
How was Gail King, right? Was she the keynote?
I miss Gail King.
Couldn't stay all day?
No, I couldn't.
Who'd you see that was interesting?
The first guest, I hate that I forget his name, but he is an entrepreneur and he goes there every year and he explains on how to be a leader. And I took a lot of things from that.
A lot of notes?
Yeah, a lot of notes. They gave us like a journal. I had a huge goodie bag. So
good stuff. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on with the show. First up on Atlanta Business Radio, Richard Lawrence with Fee.org. That's a foundation of economic education. Welcome.
Hey, Lee. It's great to be back. I'm no Gail King, but I'm happy to be featured again as a guest on your show.
So tell us about Fee. How are you serving folks?
So I am the executive vice president of Fee, and what we do is we teach high school and college students all about economics, all about how the way in which the world works from an economic point of view. And so as we're not teaching so much about personal finance, but it touches on that, but more than personal finance, more about how people can actually use economics in their daily lives. How does it work that trade actually is made of win? How do trade relationships yield win-win results? And so we talk about these big macro ideas through seminars. We teach people online through videos, through books, various other means. And we've been doing that now for 73 years, even though we've been here in Atlanta for only about 10 years.
Now, tell me about just conceptually about economics, because there's some people who see economics one way with a certain system of how business should be done, and some see it almost in the complete opposite way.
Well, it's all about a lens through which you see the world, right? And so at Fee, we really do see things in a bottom-up kind of context as opposed to top-down. And so what I mean by that is bottom-up are the types of people like Harold, who we'll meet here in just a moment, who serve people in the grassroots, serve people in their communities, and then maybe if they're successful later on, around the world, right? And so that's very much a bottom-up kind of idea, and that's truly the notion of the free market that we promote at Fee. There's the other way that you can see the world, and that's top-down. That's saying that there's a higher power, in many cases, a government that can actually dictate the way in which an economy is structured. And so we really reject that kind of way of thinking, and we embrace really an individualistic and a community and a very social, pro-social kind of way of looking at things.
Now, how did kind of these two thought concepts come about? Like, did it start out with, okay, at first it was some sort of a leader that said, I know what's best for everybody, so I have all the weapons and the power, so everybody has to do what I say, and that's how it started, and then eventually the people kind of rose up and said, hey, we know some things too. Like, how did this kind of equilibrium get?
You know, it's a good question, Lee, and I'm not sure I'll be able to give a full history on this sort of thing, but certainly what you were just describing a moment ago is feudalism, which is where local lords and various other sort of aristocrats would have controlled the lives, truly, of the people underneath their control. And so there were serfs, and the serfs really basically served the lords and the ladies of the castle. And later, we grew up out of that. We ended up, of course, getting rid of slavery. We ended up moving more toward a individual rights framework, and the people with the weapons weren't always the most persuasive. And so what happened was during the time of the Industrial Revolution is that there were people like entrepreneurs and capitalists who ended up identifying needs that people had, actually bringing people on to serve that need. They ended up generating a profit that's a signal that you're serving people well, and that's the way in which capitalism was discovered truly through trial and error, and I believe that it's the least imperfect economic system that we have up to this point. Maybe it doesn't serve the needs of every single person perfectly, but I say it's the least imperfect, and that typically tends to be interesting to people when we start a conversation that way.
Because there is no, I mean, I guess we all can agree there's no perfect system. So you're choosing between the imperfect systems.
That's exactly right. And so you can talk about various other forms of economic organization, whether it's like we were talking about feudalism, whether we were talking about enslavement of people to serve a particular need. You can talk even about what's really hot these days among young people is socialism. People believe that we can actually have a better plan from the top down for the way in which the economy is organized. But we at FEE, at our organization, we truly believe that a free market capitalist system, like I said, is the least imperfect.
And that's giving a lot of freedom to the kind of the boots on the ground.
Oh, it's absolutely. It's all boots on the ground. Like I keep saying, it's bottom up. And that's something that people in high school and college classrooms really aren't taught. They're taught that it's something closer to what we call cronyism, which is where companies and corporations actually get the government to do their bidding. And that's not what we're talking about at all. It's very much like you said, Lee, boots on the ground, grassroots, bottom up.
And then when you believe in that, then you're saying, okay, I'm comfortable with some chaos because the people on the ground are, you know, they have a bad rap, I think, in that they're selfish and it's all about me and I'm going to take what I'm going to take and I don't care about anybody else. And that's what a lot of the people's fear are, that people are going to kind of get lost in the crowd. The people who can't help themselves and can't be entrepreneurs, they're going to kind of suffer.
Well, that's exactly right, Lee, and that's where you really do need to, from a public policy standpoint at least, or maybe a standpoint of being a participant, a knowledgeable and informed participant in society, you need to be a little bit more comfortable with imperfection. That's why I keep kind of hearkening back to that. Yes, it's true. Not every single person is going to get what they want all the time. But the beauty of the system that we promote, the free market capitalist system, is that individuals have the autonomy and they have the ability to lift themselves up, to address these problems that people have, and hopefully to serve themselves by serving others.
And then when you have that kind of mindset, that's a mental shift.
Oh, right? It's a total mental shift.
Because
it's all...
it requires personal accountability, right? And I have to be accountable for myself. And I have to care about my community, too, because I'm not going to be a good kind of corporate citizen or a good citizen in my community if I'm only thinking about myself.
That's right. And that's one of the big changes in mindset that happens when you realize that you shouldn't use the power of the state or the government in order to get what you need for your company or for yourself, right? And so if you realize that the best way to actually become wealthy, if that's truly your goal, is to not take advantage of some of these systems that the government puts in place, but to actually build it yourself and to be responsible and to have that agency and to have that hustle, then that's immensely empowering. And that's truly, I think, the only way to really do it in a way that generates wealth for everybody.
So now in the 75 years that you guys have been around?
73 years, 1946.
How have you seen, is the trend good, bad? Are you happy with the progress? Are you frustrated?
It's interesting that you asked that, Lee. So when we were founded, we were in a context of the post-World War II era. And so you had a situation here in the United States where socialism, or at least a state-planned economy, was becoming more and more popular because during wartime, of course, you know, the state ended up commandeering many of the different commanding heights of the economy in order to bring online that war machine that we mobilized against Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan as well. And so at that moment in 1946, you had a situation where we were asking ourselves as a country, is this still the way in which we want to organize our economy? And you saw across the ocean in Europe, you saw that they were actually continuing with the way in which the state was controlling the economy. And they actually became even more socialist in the way that they organized things. And so FEE emerged and said, no, we're actually going to see if we can return the economy back to that bottom-up kind of context, that very free market capitalist context. And so they FEE became an organization that advocated, again, for these ideas when many people were just saying, let's become the way in which people are overseas in Europe, very socialist. These days, we are operating in a very, very different environment. We're talking about things like social justice. We're talking about things like social corporate responsibility. We're talking about all kinds of other ideas, in fact, including socialism. And I happen to believe, Lee, that the way in which the presidential candidates are talking about socialism is not entirely representative of what that word actually means. I think when they talk about things like democratic socialism, which is something you hear a lot from people like Bernie Sanders, maybe people like Elizabeth Warren, they're really not talking about state control of the economy. They're really talking about a larger welfare state. But the word socialism, I think, has always kind of had a general appeal to people who actually want to develop policies that help others in a social context. The way I use social in an economic context is the way I did a few moments ago, where I said a free market capitalist system is the most pro-social system there is, because what it does is it doesn't breed envy. It doesn't breed this type of dog-eat-dog competition that a lot of people say capitalism does. It actually breeds the type of competition and cooperation that we do want to see in the world.
Right, and I think that that's a myth, that everything has to be a zero-sum game where my win is your loss. Like, there's ways that everybody can win.
Well, you know, when you look at public policy and the way in which they divide the pie when they're looking to develop which company gets which benefit, what kind of person gets this type of tax cut versus that, you are looking at the world in a very fixed pie kind of context. And that's totally different from the way in which we see the economy in a free market sense actually works, where you can grow the pie.
Now, when you're talking to young people, how are you kind of educating them? How are you kind of opening their mind to this type of philosophy?
So as I mentioned a few moments ago, we do it in a variety of ways. We've got a great website at fee.org, F-E-E.org, where we have a series of videos, short videos, cartoon videos, mini documentaries, really high production value, really the type of things that you'd want to show either to your kids or in the classroom. And so we do it through video. We do it through written content. Every day we have articles posted on fee.org that talk about these ideas in compelling and interesting ways, through stories many of the times that we post things. We also have events, and that includes seminars that we have all during the season of summer, which is coming right upon us here. And then there's another event that we have right here in Atlanta, and it's called FeeCon. And this happens from June 13 through 15 here in Atlanta. And I really would encourage you and all of your listeners to see if that's something that could be interesting. This is the first, actually the third year that we're doing FeeCon, and it's going to be at the Marriott Marquis. You can find out much more information about FeeCon at feecon.org. And I'm just looking at the website right here. I'm looking at some of the great speakers we're going to have. People such as DeWitt Jones, who's a fabulous photographer from National Geographic. A friend of mine named Magat Wade, who is a Senegalese entrepreneur with a company called Skin is Skin. She talks about how entrepreneurship is actually the way to lift people out of poverty rather than direct government programs. People like Brian Kelly, who's a former inmate who is now working with people who are coming out of jail and teaching them how to become entrepreneurs and to take their lives and make something really great of it now that they're out of prison. Austin Wintory, he's a Grammy-nominated video game and film score composer, and he's going to be performing live some of his music in our plenary sessions. It's just going to be an awesome lineup of different people, and not only those headliners, but also a lot of sessions that talk about entrepreneurship, creative arts, politics, economics, all these sorts of things that we love talking about every day at Fee.
Now, when you're dealing with a population, and it seems like the engine is the business person for this philosophy, right? Like, the entrepreneur business person is at the heart of it. Without somebody generating money and serving people where money changes hands, it's hard to have an economic philosophy.
That's right. Without buyers and sellers, you can't really have much of an economy. I would say the individual is the heart of all of this, and the individual can choose to be a buyer or an entrepreneur.
But it's hard to be a buyer without money.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Or something to trade.
And that gets into a really deep question, Lee. What is money? And we talk about that at Fee too.
The currency, definition of currency.
Yeah.
And so how do you kind of create some sort of a safety net, or is that not relevant?
So it's a good question. So, of course, here in the U.S., we have various programs at the federal and state levels.
Right. Put that aside. In the fee world, in the perfect, imperfect fee world, how do you handle some sort of a safety net?
Well, it would be the way in which it was handled ever in human history until really the 20th century when we started having all of these programs instituted.
So family and community.
Family, community, church. Absolutely. There were all kinds of groups that would, fraternal organizations that would come together, say, for instance, if the breadwinner in a family passed away, and they would actually pay the widow something akin to a pension. And this was a membership-driven organization. This is part of what we call civil society. But you know, the problem with this kind of organization, Lee, is despite that it existed for so long in many different kind of contexts, and of course the modern world and the industrial era changed things quite a bit, so you don't want to dismiss the way in which the world changed. But the problem with these organizations that paid pensions to widows, for example, is that when Social Security was instituted, these organizations were outlawed in many ways from providing those types of services that they had always done. And so you have a problem here where people today are not necessarily able to really conceive of a world without those types of government programs because they never lived in one because they weren't necessarily allowed to thrive.
Now, do you think it's possible to kind of go back? Like once a population starts getting free stuff, it's very difficult for the politician to kind of backtrack and take that away.
Have you ever seen a government program be taken away or disappear?
No.
Well, you know, it's funny, and I totally agree with you. I was up at a fabulous event up in D.C. about 3 weeks ago put on by the American Enterprise Institute. It's called their Leadership Network, and I was finally able to participate in it over 3 days. If anyone is interested in meeting various entrepreneurs, think tank leaders, educational leaders, people in the military, people in politics, all together in one event, definitely look up the American Enterprise Institute Leadership Network. And I was in a breakout session about how you address poverty. And it came up in this session, how many organizations, let me ask you this, Lee, do you believe are at the federal level addressing social welfare causes? And I'm talking everything from healthcare to food to housing. How many organizations, separate and distinct agencies at the federal level, do you believe exist?
1,000.
1,000? You know, that's a pretty high number, I think. So what we found is that there are over 80 organizations, and these are all doing things like the WIC program, food stamps, Medicare, Medicaid, all these different types of things. Whenever one person in the Congress, for example, has a great idea about what they can do at the federal level to address poverty, it never happens that these agencies are collapsed or merged. It always happens that they're added onto. And so the problem with this type of organization is you have a tremendously powerful bureaucracy that exists not only to help people, because I believe that these people who are working in those agencies actually do want to help the welfare of individuals, and that's great, but they also are there for their own benefit. And this is a way that we kind of foster questions in our students. You know, people who work in government are people too. They exist to make a living and to make a livelihood. And so you see that played out when you look at the network of organizations at that level that are working ostensibly to help people, but they're truly probably taking more value out of the economy than they're producing.
But I can make an argument that some of these large businesses also fall into the same kind of bureaucratic trap. You know, they get to be a certain size, and then they start getting protective of their territory, and then they lean on the government to change rules maybe that favor them or to add kind of regulations that didn't exist when they started.
Oh, it's absolutely true.
So it's, to me, the problem isn't necessarily government. It's any large kind of bureaucratic institution.
You're right. And truly, like I mentioned a moment ago, it comes down to the individual, the choices that the individual makes. I mean, the only entity in our world that makes a decision is not a company. It's not government. It's not a bureaucracy. It's the individual. It's the individuals who lead those groups, who actually do these things. And so I may have mentioned a term to you the last time that I was on your show, and that was regulatory capture. And this is something that, you know, for example, when you have the Department of Commerce or EPA, for example, and the EPA ostensibly is there, right, to regulate companies that could potentially pollute the environment. But what ends up happening, and this is despite Republican, it's Republican administration, it's not Democrat administration, it's regardless what party it is. But these organizations are captured by those very entities that they're seeking to regulate, and they are made, those agencies, to actually set things up in to benefit those organizations and those companies themselves. And so that's not free market capitalism. That's a bureaucracy that's been hijacked by the very thing that it's seeking to regulate. That's not what we're talking about when we're talking about free market capitalism. But that's a natural outgrowth of when you get a government so big that it touches so many things.
Right. And, but I think that some of the trap in communicating this to a large group of people is to always make the government the villain, because the government has so much power, obviously. But I think that you have to also include some of these large business enterprises as part of the problem as well. The when you call business just business, that's a big word that covers a lot of ground. Like in our studio, we focus on the small to mid-sized business owner. That's to me, the person that's the boots on the ground. And occasionally we have the mega business person in here, but typically it's a small to mid-sized person that's grinding, that's just trying to make it.
Sure.
And that's the 80, 90% of the population is that person, right, or works for that person. But a handful of people, you know, are the ones that control a lot of the wealth and the power and the control some of the rules and who gets what and is allowed to do certain things.
You're totally right. And we would never want to let those people off the hook, right? I mean, there are many large aerospace companies that are in very close contact with Department of Defense and various other big agencies, and they benefit very much from very interesting and profitable contracts that
and
the government.
And relationships that go back many years and are very convoluted,
that's
to say
right.
the least.
That's right. So never let them off the hook. I'm totally with you.
Right. I had seen recently there was something about it was the organizations that do the tax returns, like the
H&R Block kind of things.
Right. So that the government made a rule that you should be able to do that online, like for free. There's free for most people would fit into that bill. But then these people said no, you know, that, or they made a rule that kind of funneled it through them, that the government wasn't allowed to do an online platform. Like they're in cahoots. I mean, it's the same type of cronyism that's at the heart of a lot of these problems.
That's what we call it, crony capitalism. It's not done honestly.
Right. And that just gives business people in general a bad name, because we all get lumped into this, we're the greedy exploiters, and the vast majority aren't.
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing to disentangle, of course, because you end up seeing all these things in the news. You end up seeing all these examples of big companies that are taking advantage of you and me, right? But you've got to look at it from a wider point of view, and you've got to understand the root cause of this sort of thing. It's not necessarily the government as a bad thing, but it's bad decisions that are being made by people in government because of those convoluted relationships that you have.
And then, you know, to me, the thing that's the most disturbing is the amount of money these large or businesses have to pay the government in lobbying fees is minimal compared to the billions of dollars they can get. I mean, it's pennies on the dollar.
Sure, but that seems like a great investment to me if yeah, I were in their shoes.
Exactly. That's the problem. That is a great investment.
Sad to say it is.
So you're going to fix that, right?
We're getting there. And so, you know, for fees purposes, we're looking at the long run, right? And so if you're educating high school and college students, you can't necessarily expect that they're going to be the leaders that we need tomorrow or maybe even next year. But when you inform them and give them a mindset to be critical thinkers in this way,
right,
then that the returns are going to come much later, but they're going to be great.
And also to be able to have a conversation with people who may not agree with you in a kind of a polite way and a respectful way, so that we don't have to go to name calling.
No, ad hominem has never really changed anyone's mind, unfortunately, I think.
And that way we can expand kind of our groups so that they're not as siloed.
Yeah, it's important, especially in the social media context we inhabit, to de-silo and to talk with people who might have different opinions.
All right, so if somebody wanted to learn more about Fee or go to FeeCon, what are the coordinates?
So the coordinates are fee.org. That's our main website. That's where we have all that fabulous daily content. And then if you're more interested specifically in FeeCon, which is, again, from June 13 through 15 here in the ATL, you can go to FeeCon.org.
Good stuff, Richard. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks, Lee.
All right, hang with us. One more guest. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Harold Alexander with Underground App. Welcome, Harold.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So did you learn anything? Did you get tickets?
I picked up. I'm actually going to go and do the FeeCon and check out the website. It's very, very interesting.
All right. So tell us about Underground App. How are you serving folks?
All right. So basically, Underground App is a software application that is a social media platform that connects fans with undiscovered artists of their liking. And we're using AI to do this.
Artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence. That's correct.
Now, are you an artist? Are you a frustrated artist? Or you like art?
I'm a developer. Software developer by trade. I actually was an artist when I was in high school and some in college. My mom was like, you know, you probably should focus on your degree more than anything else. So she, I did a little performing here and there, and then I started focusing on schoolwork. So,
and then, but you're an entrepreneur. You have your own.
I am. Yes.
So, in my book, an entrepreneur is an artist. Anybody that starts something from nothing, creates something from nothing is an artist.
Yes. Yes. That's completely correct. We are.
So then, how'd the idea come about? What was the genesis of the idea?
That's a good question. So, this happened years and years ago. I was in Buckhead. I don't know if you remember, but you know, Buckhead before it became, you know, really trendy and ritzy, used to be a bunch of clubs. Mm-hmm. There used to be a people, and it was a really nice day. Me and some of my friends were kind of hanging out on the streets, just kind of watching people walk by, people watching, going in and out. And a close friend of mine comes up to me and he says, did you hear the news? And I was like, no, what news? He was like, T.I. just got signed. And I said, who's T.I.? And he was like, oh, he's this underground hip-hop artist. He's like, I said, I've never heard of him. And he said, that's because you're not plugged into the underground scene. And I was like, I felt so, like, all the other boys knew about him. So I said, you know what? I'm going to create something that will connect people so that they could, you know, be in contact with the underground scene.
So they can discover some of these.
Exactly.
Kind of under the radar.
Under the radar, undiscovered artists. There's a lot of artists that are out there that are not being exposed. I did some research, and the amount of, you know, from music to movies to even comedians, they represent, the one that you probably see represent less than 3% of all the entertainment that's being produced in America, even around the world, less than 3%. The rest of the artists that you're seeing that's out there is undiscovered, underground artists.
So they're just grinding? They're grinding.
They're putting their stuff all over. They're, you know, they're trying to use Facebook and Instagram to get exposure. They're using, you know, all these other social media platforms, LinkedIn, but they're falling on deaf ears. Mm-hmm. Mainly because on those social media platforms like the, you know, Instagram, not knocking them, but on those social media platforms, the vast majority of people go and see the artists that they like, the movies that they like. You know, they're finding out, you know, they want to find out what happened with Avengers or what happened with those other movies or what Drake's doing or Cardi B or some of these other guys.
So the top people kind of suck all the oxygen out, and then there's no more kind of room for the other person.
That's exactly right. So undiscovered artists are having a really, really difficult time.
So people don't even know they exist.
They don't know they exist at all. Hence the term undiscovered. Mm-hmm, I was talking to my sister, and I was like, yeah, nobody knows them. You're like, well, that's why they're undiscovered, because nobody knows them, right? And the number of people that are being discovered from these platforms, YouTube, Justin Bieber got discovered from YouTube, is very, very, very small.
It's like a needle in the haystack.
It's a needle. It is a very, very small chance that you're going to get discovered. So
now, what advice do you have? So you're an artist out there, and you think you're good, at least, right? Or your parents think you're good. Somebody thinks you're good.
Right.
You have a slowly building a following, and then what?
What to
do
next?
What do you do?
Well, so the misconception is that being good is what you need, that's not true.
Not true.
Yeah, there are tons of good artists. There are tons of great artists that you're just not going to make it. Being good is not enough. You have to. There's a lot of techniques that go into getting discovered, and to tell you the truth, a lot of it's just luck. You know, it is.
They don't want to tell you that.
they don't
want to put that.
They
in the
don't
know,
but I mean, that's the true part of it. I mean, you know, you can send your material all over, and you know, the reality of it is just basic luck. I mean, and I can spend the rest of the day spilling off artists, from comedians to spoken word artists, to even movies that I've seen that I thought was worthy of being in the mainstream that never made it, mm-hmm. that's sitting on someone's hard drive that you'll never get a chance to see. And it's great. I mean, it's really, really, really good material, but they just don't get a chance to make it to the mainstream. So, so being good is not enough. Luck plays a lot into it. I wish I could give artists a step-by-step book on, you know, do this, A, B, C, D, right. all the way down, but there, unfortunately, there isn't anything. I'm trying to be honest with artists to let them know that, hey, there's not really a step process that you can go through from being in your basement to, you know, performing in at State Farm Arena. There's a lot of luck that's involved.
So now your solution is a way to kind of at least give them a shot to be found by somebody.
Exactly. So basically because of this, the current mantra that we have as far as how entertainers are being discovered, that's when I wanted to come up with Underground. So like I said, T.I. has been out for a while. I mean, this Underground has been in my head for probably over 12 years, probably maybe a little longer than that. But it's evolved over the years, but I wanted to provide a platform for artists so where they can get discovered a lot easier without a lot of the noise that's going on in a lot of the social media area right now. So basically what I did was I'm creating a social media platform. I'm using artificial intelligence. And one of the key things about Underground is that signed artists or major artists aren't allowed on our platform. So you won't be able to find any mainstream artists. You won't find any main movies. You won't find any big time comedians. It's strictly for undiscovered artists. So when people go to Underground, all they're going to be looking for is Undiscovered.
And so Undiscovered or unsigned, does that mean that they have a relationship with a label or they have an agent? Like what's the lines of Undiscovered?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I actually had to get a lawyer involved to do that because he was like, so what's your parameter? So I have a long legal document on our website that kind of describes what we do. But basically, you can't be a part of an organization or be funded by an organization of $50,000 or more. So basically, if someone is backing you, if somebody is pushing you, and the size of the organization is over $50,000, then they're not undiscovered.
But like in music, there's a label that backs people, so that's kind of easy. But like, how would a comedian?
Well, comedians, you know, they can get picked up by certain organizations, and they can be, you know, backed by organizations. Like a comedian, Russell Simmons used to have a comedic label, and then he used to push comedians all over the country. Mm-hmm. They backed them, they promoted them, they went on the radio. But you know, he had millions of dollars backing him. So they under our terms,
of
his people would be able to get on our platform. It's just to keep it simple, it's for artists that are. You know, pretty
eating
much
ramen,
right? Eating ramen noodles, like working a 9-to-5 and just pretty much grinding it out. And so that's kind of how it is.
So now is this kind of just you doing good for the world, or is there a financial model behind it?
It's a little of both. I want to do good for the world. But there is a financial model in it. We have a lot of cool technology that we're adding that's going to be, that I think a lot of artists would appreciate. For example, you've gone to events where at the end of the event, every artist will say, follow me on Twitter, social media. Yeah. Right. So on Underground, artists don't have to do that anymore. They don't have to announce their social media handle. They don't have to Twitter handle. If an artist goes on Underground, they become they create a profile. They just say, on our platform, I'm performing at, let's say, the Tabernacle. Let's say I'm performing at Tabernacle on Saturday. They put in that information. It'll be posted on the feed so all of their fans and followers will see it. So now if one of a fan goes to the show, all the fan has to do is open up the app. And when they open up the app, they'll see that artist's profile, all the songs they're performing, and all their social media handle without the artist ever even announcing their name. So this is one of our financial models. So the artist would pay a fee for that to have that feature. We also have another feature that artists will pay for where artists, when they're performing, they need video copies of their performances, you know, like having a recording. So we have a cool feature where if an artist is performing on stage and a a fan is recording them, all of those recordings will get sent to the artist. So if there are 20 people recording with their phones, the artist will get 20 different copies, 20 different angles of them being performing in their on their profile.
If they have the app.
If they have the app.
If those 20 people recording have the app.
Exactly. The people in the audience would have to have the app. So they'd record the artist on stage, you know, like most people already do. And then the app will ask them, would you like to send a copy of that recording to the artist that just performed? The artist will get the copy. They can walk away with 20 or 30 different copies. The cool thing about it is if the artist selects your copy, you actually get paid for that. So what will happen is that, so if you record the artist and then the artist say, I'm going to keep this copy, then you'll get a small payment for that, for recording an artist.
And that's the artist pays them.
Yeah, well, the artist will be paying us, and then we would pay we would pay the fan that would that recorded it.
And then so what stage are you at? Is this thing out in the wild yet, or are you still beta testing? Where are you at?
We actually are about to go into beta in about another week. We're doing pre-signups right now. So we have a registration on our website, underground.app, and artists can go there and they can pre-register. The first 100 artists that sign up will get access to our live feature for free for 60 days. 60 days free. Sorry.
And then this sounds like a chicken and egg thing. You need artists, but you also need the people. The fans,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly, you know, I get that. I've gotten that a lot, the whole chicken and egg about how are you doing both. So, yeah, we do need both. We need fans. We're building up with artists because fans aren't going to really go there if there are no artists, right? And then artists doesn't go there if there are no fans. So we're trying to build, kind of get a little momentum where we're telling people about it. We're getting great feedback from it. Our artificial intelligence, our live feature. We got a couple of little tricks up our sleeves that's going to make it kind of cool. I have an intern that's going to be actually working with me that's going to be hitting some of the college campuses to promote Underground. We're going to be doing some concerts, live concerts, so people can see the app in real time so that they can actually see the artist. A lot of people go to performances, especially undiscovered artists, they'll go to them and they'll say three or four and then they'll leave. They're like, oh my God, that artist was so great. What was his name again? I don't know, but now they'll be able to have it. I was actually at an event where someone went and there were a bunch of artists perform and they was like, they left and it was like, oh my God, I forgot the name of that artist. He was so good. And so that happens all the time. So basically what would happen is we're going to have a concert in a couple of venues that will kind of showcase the app.
Now, so music is the first kind of group that you're going after?
Actually, music and film. We're doing film.
So small filmmakers,
yeah.
Independent filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And then we're going to do comedy, and then we'll do spoken word artists as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But you got to start somewhere.
We do have to start somewhere, yes. Yeah. So we've actually are making an inroads into the film industry. We got a few musicians already, and we're taking all genre. We're taking gospel, we're taking country, we're taking pop, we're taking folk. any genre of music, if you do music, you're welcome on Underground. So it'll be open to a wide audience of people and get more exposure. And because we're using artificial intelligence, you don't have to worry about searching for them. You don't have to worry about a lot of different aspects, because all we do is ask you some questions at the beginning of the profile, and then we will we'll hand off what we feel like is your what's a good match to you. And you know, as artificial intelligence, just like any intelligence, it'll grow over time, right? So as humans, we get smarter as we do more, we make mistakes. Artificial intelligence or machine learning is the exact same way. Machine learning learns and grows as it gets more and more. So you know, the first couple, you know, will be good, then the next will be great, and then we'll just keep adding on to that. So
now, how does it handle, like, you know, like right now I'm about to work out, so I'm in the mood for kind of fast paced. I want to listen to, like, you know, high intensity music, but later on I want to chill out, so I want kind of slower. So, like, how does it, you know, I'm not in the mood for one thing all the time, like in different occasions, kind of.
Right. Well, no, I totally understand that. No, so we're not music streaming. So we're just social media. So it'll work just like a LinkedIn or a Facebook or Instagram.
Right. But so, like, sometimes I want that high intensity music. So if I put that as a genre of music I like, then I'll have that kind of,
right.
And then I'll go, okay, I'll remember this group here next time I'm in the mood for that.
Right. Oh, yeah. So what we'll basically do is we'll be plugged into some of your other sites, and you can go on and change it if you don't want to. Like, if you go in and we have a set, a profile set of you, and you like high intensity music, and then you say, okay, well, I want something a little more mellow, you can go into our back end and just change, you know, some of the settings that you want. That's how it's going to be at the beginning, and then in the future, we'll be plugged into some of your streaming services, so that as you change your mood, and we'll detect those changes, and it will, your feed will automatically change based on that. But if you want to change your, what you're exposed to, then you can, you'll be able to go in and change it.
So now what do you need more of right now?
Artists.
Artists.
Yeah, we need artists. We're looking for artists and fans to come on our sites, but we're looking for artists. We're trying to get to our 100 sign up first. So we're making good progress, getting a lot of good, you know, interest in it. But yeah, we're looking for artists. Both film, we're looking for all four, the film, comedy, spoken word, and music. But, you know, film and music are the two biggest one we're working on right now. But if you're in any four, I would love to talk to you.
And then if they wanted to connect with you, what's the website again?
Underground.app. That's underground.app. You can go to our site. There's a pre-registration right below the homepage. I mean, right below the main banner. You can go there, fill out whether you're a fan or you're an artist, and then sign up. And then, yeah, we'll be ready to go.
And then for your day job, you help businesses with apps, creating, using artificial intelligence and doing kind of the back end of websites and things like that?
Exactly. I don't do much websites, but I do a lot of back end apps and artificial intelligence and things like that to kind of keep people.
And then what's a profile of a customer who would hire you for that?
We mainly use startups. Startups that are building apps for their businesses, companies, either small to medium-sized businesses. You know, less than 100 employees is normally our sweet spot. And they would, you know, come to us, give us a general dynamic, and we would kind of like to let them know. I'm actually doing a talk. I'm glad you mentioned that. So there's a talk called Apps, Do You Need One? And basically it's going to be held at the Loudermilk Center actually this Saturday. And I'm doing a about an hour talk on a presentation on if you need an app. So I'm actually going to be building an app live on stage. It's going to be really interesting. I've never done that before. Normally it takes me like a few hours, maybe even a couple of days to build one. But I told them that I was going to build an app live in front of people. So, and I haven't even started. It's Saturday. I haven't done any prep work. I've done the slideshows for the presentation. Right. So the first 20-30 minutes the first 20 minutes will be presentation PowerPoint. The last 20 minutes is going to be opening up and building an app live. Wow. Where people are going to be right there looking at me. So I tell people that either this is going to be really exciting or I'm going to crash and burn. So I don't know if you've ever seen one of those talk like Steve Jobs on Apple. They used to have a new iPhone that they would release, and then they would open it up and it would just crash on them on stage. Right. Yeah, so that could very well happen this Saturday. So I'm looking forward to it.
And then where is that event?
It's at the Loudermilk Center. It is it's called, you can go to bit.ly/brandtech2019, and that's bit.ly/brandtech2019. Now I will tell you, we are almost sold out. We only have 100 tickets. That we only got the top floor, the Loudermilk Center, and they only allow us for 100 people. And when I last checked, which was about a day or so ago, we had like about 20, a little less than 20 tickets left. And that was a few days ago. And I did a talk to kind of spur some tickets. So I don't know what the ticket sales are right now, but yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Well, thank you, Harold, so much for sharing your story.
No problem. Thank you. Happy to be here.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Sanjay Touré. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.